Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ali. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk. Rumble. No life.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast. I'm El Fakador Laurie Blake and I am joined by housemate Simon Longdon.
Hello.
Hello. We had a fun little trip out on Monday, you and I, and some other people. We went to see Jojo Rabbit at the cinema.
Oh, yeah.
What did you make of the film? Obviously, we'll talk about wrestling in a few moments.
The people don't want to hear us talk about wrestling.
Nah, wrestling is meh.
Yeah, Jojo Rabbit's great.
Isn't it?
But critical response has been weird. Just... like very fancy pants critics basically describing a Nazi Hitler movie they would have made,
yeah,
and then becoming frustrated that somebody else didn't make that movie.
Damn you, Taika, with your ideas of what your film should
with
be.
With your ideas you had 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think this is one. I really can't recommend Jojo Rabbit highly enough. I think it's really funny, it's really heartfelt, it's so well made. There's so many cameos from people you sort of recognize doing brilliant. One that, like, Sam Rockwell is fantastic in it. It is just a amazing, funny film. It just also happens to be about Nazis. Mm. But not really. I think that's kind of the thing that people are struggling to get their head around with it, is the idea that, like, if you're doing something about Nazis, how serious does it have to be? How satirical and how much does it have to push back against the entire idea of that level of fascism and all the things that the Nazis did? How much do you have to address all of that stuff? Because I think what Jojo Rabbit is doing and what the film is kind of about is the idea of, it's, I guess it's Taika Waititi's shtick, right, of being like, I'm making a film about growing up. Like, The Boy and Hunt for the Wilder People are all kind of coming-of-age films. And this is, I think, just the next one in that line of attacking adolescence in a different way. And this is all about the notion that, like, Jojo's worldview is obviously, like, impressionable. And he's impressionable at an age of extreme propaganda. And this is him discovering that stuff isn't necessarily as be-all and end-all as people are making it out
to
be.
If you can't watch a child basically angrily reciting a Hitler speech to his own mother and then becoming upset by the result of that.
Yeah.
And come away from that thinking, you know what, if only we had stopped the film and a grown-up had turned to the camera and really given us a bloody good history lesson about why this was bad.
Yeah.
Like, well then...
Well, like The Big Short.
Well, yeah. It's just, yeah, exactly, yeah. It's just like, I just thought it was really obvious.
Yeah.
It's just so obvious what's happening. Like, you just have to take away what the film presents in front of you, which is this boy and his struggles with the propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, some of the propaganda was silly, but some of it is also not so silly because it was kind of true. That's what they were saying about the Jews back in the day.
Like,
So I don't know. I just thought some of the critical response has been, I think, strange.
Well, it's weird, isn't it? Because they sort of missed the point that the satire is that all this stuff was quite childish. It obviously had, like, incredibly impactful real world ramifications. But, you know, like there's bits where people are listening to the kid and going, he's exactly right, but he's saying stuff that's really fantastical and childish.
But how, this is the thing I didn't quite understand, is like, if that's the critique of it, how far of a grisly reimagining of the atrocities in Auschwitz did they want to see on screen?
Jojo Grizzly Bear.
Yeah, in order for them to be satisfied that it had been addressed enough.
Mm.
And I was just kind of like, I don't get why that's required from this. I don't understand why that bar is missing. Yes, it's got a Hitler in it.
Yeah.
So, like, that's sort of missing the point. Yeah. You know, I just thought it was.
It is an imaginary Hitler, though.
It's so an imaginary
does
Hitler.
Does that make it okay?
It's in the boy's head.
Yeah. I think it dealt with the things actually. Respectfully, carefully,
subtly. And the whole thing was done
through the prism of the adults
and humanity.
It was the preserve of, like, you know, all the actual atrocities of the war and everything else, all the top level stuff was talked about in hushed tones by adults and trickled down through sort of Chinese whispers, I guess, to the kids, and they understood, you know, one tenth of what they were being told. I think it's an amazing showcase as well for a bunch of the actors in it, like Roman Griffin, or what's his name, I think, is who plays Jojo. He's
unbelievable in it.
Yeah, he's so good. He's so expressive. He's so funny. I don't know what the name of the little kid who plays Yorkie is, who's Jojo's little pal, but he is like the young Nick Frost.
I saw. Yeah,
he just is.
I saw an interview with them two together.
Yeah.
And they're really funny.
Are they?
Yeah, they're really funny. The kid who plays Yorkie is really funny.
I just thought it's a wonderful movie. It made me laugh. It made me tear up. It did everything I wanted from a film.
Yeah, and great.
Yeah,
Scarlett Johansson's great in it as well.
Yeah, she's fantastic. I can't recommend it enough, basically. But let's talk about wrestling now, because we're going to be talking about a new faction that debuted in NXT. Here is the show. But let's jump in straight away with a big topic that happened on NXT, which was the debut of a new faction in a slightly flawed, slightly boring, I don't think very well done version of bringing Chelsea Green onto NXT TV.
Well, it was a faction debut in which we all know that a faction exists.
Yeah.
But they weren't there. Which is an interesting way of doing a debut for a faction.
Yes.
By actually not having the faction debut.
Yeah, so this all came at the end of a match between Mia Yim and Caden Carter that was pretty good. It was a little showcase for Caden's sort of Lucha Libre stuff, but Mia Yim handily defeats her and protect your neck off the turnbuckle. As Mia Yim's picking her up to sort of give her the sportswomanly hug, Chelsea Green slides into the ring, hits him with the forearm, knocking Caden into Mia out of the Yim. No, Mia out of the ring. Mia Yim out of the ring. Oh, God. Oh, my brain. Mia leaves the ring, and then Chelsea does a little pose, goes outside, and then Robert Stone, who is Robbie E, the former TNA X Division champion, is there and says, 2020 is the year in which the... What's it called? The Stone Company?
Stone Brand,
the
isn't it?
The Stone Brand, yeah. The Stonemasons.
Yeah.
It's the year in which the Stonemasons take over NXT. And the first signing of that is the hottest free agent currently in WWE. And I do mean the hottest, Chelsea Green. And I just thought this all lacked, for want of a better word, considering we're talking about these two people, impact. It didn't quite sell the idea of it's a brand. Like, are we going to go week by week signing people? This is a gimmick that Robert Stone, i.e. Robbie E, has been doing in live shows for a while. He's also been managing the Outliers, which is Dan Matha and Riddick Moss over in NXT UK.
This has also been
kind of the same thing.
This has also been his Twitter presence for a while.
Yeah.
So he's still going to wrestle though, right? Or is he done?
That's what I don't like. Because he was kind of wasteful. He's very good.
Because I mean, I was just double checking now, because I was kind of like, I kind of knew, obviously, he's been in the performance center and stuff. I was like, oh, is he doing the managing? Because has he had to slow down or retire? No, he's just doing that, which is weird.
And I mean, I think as a long-term viewer of NXT and someone who obviously does news of wrestling for a living, having seen kind of all the stuff of Chelsea Green and Gianna Perrazzo getting signed by WWE, like, together. They've been working together on live shows. They've got literally co-branding of all of their, like, Titantrons and stuff. They've got the same sort of gear and that stylized C&D logo certain ways around, or is it the G? I can't really remember. They even had a WWE PC YouTube channel video last week about or a couple of weeks ago about them getting their Raw debuts and in their losing efforts to various people, but still getting their sort of big main roster moments. But that was a both of them in the same video talking about how happy they were for each other. So it's kind of weird to have them like, and then, and also we saw them on September the 25th we saw them on NXT TV in the crowd.
Yes.
And this was kind of like essentially announcing their return, because they were signed earlier this year and Chelsea's been out with a wrist injury when she was supposed to debut. That was a match that got taped and never aired because she actually suffered a broken wrist during the match. So, like, it's kind of all been a long time coming that these two are actually going to appear on NXT TV. And then we get all the way down the line here and they're not together anymore. So I don't know whether that sort of was a test for the live shows to put them together as a tag team, or whether Robert Stone is now going to sign Gianna Perrazzo.
I don't know. It seemed, well, he's managing, pumped Zsa LaBeouf in NXT UK, isn't he?
I don't know.
Riddick Moss.
Oh, yes, Riddick Moss, yeah.
Buff LaBeouf.
Buff LaBeouf.
And
Zsa LaBeouf.
So, yeah, it seems weird to not, when they're a known entity, the whole thing seems weird. But I also thought this was the exact, this is the kind of thing that was going to happen when WWE, get slightly confused as to whether this is a developmental brand or whether this is just a third TV show. And these are the slightly mixed up moments and factions. And so it's like they've got one foot in Raw, one foot as a tag team, one foot as these like lovable indie stars coming up to the PC. Now they're not together and a faction, but also a solo act. I think what to me is quite cool, which, I mean, this is just a broad point, but I like he's good, first of all, and he's good on the mic, and he's good on Twitter. He's got a good personality. Doing a brand thing is obviously a very modern retelling of faction stories anyway. Also, just having a guy managing a single female wrestler, that's just an interesting dynamic that I think that's worth having.
That's worth having. Yeah, I think the brand thing, you end up quite quickly slipping into Titus Worldwide territory, which wasn't the best thing ever. But I guess
whose fault was that, really? I think it was our fault.
Yeah, maybe. I think the potential is like there with this, and I think the setup of it wasn't very good. But I think going from where we've sort of left off now, like the idea that, you know, Robert Stone's going to sign more people to his brand, he's going to slowly build a faction through paying people. And I guess that, you know, that's a very common wrestling thing. It's like AOP and Seth are a team because he's paying them quite a lot of money to be his security guards. That's all fine. It's just here, this didn't make much of a statement for Chelsea Green, who has been a factor in WWE for a while. She's been a known quantity within NXT, not like ever really made an impact, but she has. People have been hearing whispers of Chelsea Green, the former Knockouts champion, the hot mess who was on some of AEW's pay-per-views before, you know, they got weekly TV. Like, I think she's a big deal in that sense. She's, you know, married to Zack Ryder or going out with Zack Ryder. I think there's a cachet to the name of Chelsea Green that you might want to do more than she just pushes Caden Carter over.
Well, so let's go back a little bit, because at the start of the episode, we had very clearly established who are the contenders for Rhea Ripley's title. We then later on have this match between Mia Yim and, I forget her name, Caden Carter. Caden Carter. So they have that. So we've now very clearly established Mia Yim has sort of dropped out of that and is now in the second tier.
Yeah.
So we're going to have this big star who is just as big as some of those other names, perhaps even more so than some of those names, but has now been firmly debuted into the B tier of the
women's division,
which doesn't have a belt as well,
which also doesn't have a belt. Yeah. So then you couple that with, yes, I get the brand thing, and this is the same thing. This is sort of the same problem that Titus Worldwide had, which is something becomes a brand when it is knowingly and baked in with an identity and a role and a whatever. So, like, what is the brand?
Yeah.
That's the bit. That's the, as soon as he said that and he was sort of describing it as the brand, I was like, okay, well, what is the brand?
Yeah, what do you believe in?
Yeah, so sometimes these things you think they can almost kind of go like,
what are you selling?
Like Simon, like the Simon Dean, Simon System style of like gurus and whatever. Like, so Matt Hardy is famously the brand on Twitter.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I just thought it was all a little bit, it was a lot of ideas kind of happening at the same time. And I just think it's an awkward time. It's difficult to firmly establish who all the people you should care about the most doing the most important thing, which is going for the main title in the women's division, and then later on try and make Chelsea Green feel like a big deal.
Yeah,
when she literally can't be because she's gone.
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing, is like you having her appear in Attack Mia Yim makes sense, establishes her against an already well-established known name within NXT. However, she didn't even hit Mia Yim in this bit. She clocks Carter, who falls into Yim, who falls out of the ring. And then they're both supposed to just be down while she does her pose and the talk and the chat and all that stuff. I just feel like a longer beatdown or something like a bigger move would have just made a bit more of an like impression on people. Because I think most people were sort of going, oh, that's Chelsea Green.
Well,
even Mauro, when Robert Stone came over and started doing his, like, we've never heard, we didn't know that Chelsea Green was going to be on the show, we don't know anything about this brand, Mauro just sort of went, yeah, and then the Robert Stone brand on commentary. He was just immediately in line with what was happening and saying it. And it was like, why aren't you like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, I mean, Mara says a lot of things. He also said "dat thang" when Keith Lee was in the ring. So let's not dive too deeply into what Mara is saying.
But I think, like, when you're like, obviously, that's making the action kind of sing or attempting to. This is explaining what's happening to the audience who are sitting there going, "What's the brand?
Yeah,
like, who is this man?"
So I think we're going off some pretty ropey iconography at this point, but she was wearing sort of quite nice jeans and nice clothes, so I think they're going for
Banana,
like,
Republic.
Yeah. I think they're going for the sort of, we're fashionistas, we're cool, we're better than you kind of thing,
which was kind of what her gimmick was when she originally joined TNA.
Yes. So
before she was the hot mess, which turned out to be the better gimmick.
Yeah, exactly. And Robert Stone obviously wearing like the cool suit and glasses, or whatever. Yep. He's going for sort of like, I guess, hip, like, woke Corey Graves.
Yeah,
that's how I would describe his style.
Can't say oxymorons, mate. But I guess
what she can't be though, and this is why they didn't do the aggressive beatdown.
Yeah,
what she can't be is another super tough person in the women's division, because it's full of like legitimate MMA fighters who have recently had really violent matches. So it's like, it's hard to debut her and make her come across as, because she also doesn't have that like build either. So, you know, like Rhea Ripley looks hard as she looks so tough, and so does Shayna, so does Mia Yim. You know, like, it's, that's a big part of that women's division, I think, which is that there's a lot of reality and realism baked into their styles and the characters they've got, that to have, it'd be very difficult for Chelsea Green to come and be in that space. So,
weird to debut her that way then, isn't it?
It's exactly. Like,
other form of,
something's
like,
not link syncing up.
And
quite,
I think it's because they sort of NXT'd themselves out of doing something that's a bit more raw and doing a parade. You know, like, I think they sort of were like, it has to be sort of within the format of the NXT indie show style. It has to be a wrestling angle. It has to be this. And it's like, no, it could just be like an entertainment style raw angle where something kind of ludicrous happens to debut this brand. Or debut the brand with other people and then announce that you've signed Chelsea Green and Deonna and have them as a tag team, but put them in a big match straight away. I just think everything about this kind of went wah wah.
Well, I guess the other thing is, knowing how recently, like you said, even their Titantrons are the same. Mm-hmm. Knowing how recently that they've been seen as a team, this suddenly debuting her like this feels like a decision made fairly recently.
Yeah.
Perhaps slightly too recently.
Well, that's and I guess that they've brought her into Raw to go against Charlotte Flair. She lost. She then appeared on Main Event, beat Sarah Logan, lost to Natalia on Main Event. So she's been putting like triple duty on different shows. But it just means that she even the last few things she's done in WWE have diminished her appearance in NXT.
Mm.
If you are paying attention to the whole product that they're putting out there.
So if you've got 11 hours a week.
If you stay at home a lot, then you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it is tricky. But that is also, that will be the indefinite loop that NXT stuck in, though. If they're going to, because they obviously debuted like Samoa Joe.
Yeah.
Or Shinsuke. When they debuted, they were firmly established.
Yeah.
Genuinely big names outside of WWE. Chelsea Green is, but not to that level.
No.
So it's difficult to start debuting people. Like, even to a certain extent, you could even say, like, Adam Cole was kind of just about got away with it. Because people didn't really... The crowd, even then, wasn't that knowing of, like, Bobby Fish and
you think
Kyle
they went
Riley.
Away to Google it to be like, oh, Adam Cole, baby.
I don't know, but I just think... I think they knew...
Catchphrases.
They obviously knew Adam Cole. Yeah. But, like, I don't know. I just think that there's been somewhat diminishing returns trying to constantly debut people as if they are...
Massive stars.
These huge, massive stars. And actually... Yep. And simultaneously treat them like enhancement talent.
Yeah. But then...
Have them in the PC on YouTube being like, oh, it's just so great to be here. Mm-hmm. Like, one honor. Like, that's all development stuff. Like, Shinsuke Nakamura wasn't, like, doing that. You know, he was...
Of course he wasn't. Shinsuke Nakamura.
He was surfing, but I then think, you've most got the time.
He loves surfing. But you've got people like Austin Theory, who are, I think... two classes after Chelsea Green in terms of like the PC signings and Shotzi Blackheart as well, who both had matches on the Christmas Day episode of NXT. I think it was Christmas. And Austin Theory was immediately in a match with Roderick Strong, which just just established him as, you know, he lost. But he then comes out this week and he gets his like win back match with someone else and starts to build momentum from there. But that match just went, this guy's really good. And he's in here against this level of competitor. Shotzi Blackheart, the same thing with Bianca Belair. Like, it was a losing effort, but she got to shine. And then sort of implicitly, it's implied that she's kind of on that level. Chelsea Green coming out and cheap-shotting someone in, like a snooker sort of move with, this is someone on my level, but I'm hitting her into someone bigger.
But also, ultimately, she debuted, right? But... she didn't speak.
No.
Robbie did.
Yeah.
Or Robert Stone did. And couched it in, this is the first signing of the Stone brand. So already, that takes the shine off this being about her.
Yeah.
That, what we saw there was about the debut, aborted or otherwise, of the Robert Stone brand. Not necessarily... here we are offering up to you, fans, and Chelsea Green, because you really like her. They actually couched her in this thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that means in terms of where they see her in the sort of wider world.
Mm.
But, you know, how different would it have been if the Stone brand thing could have happened separately, perhaps interrupting her? One of the later round dusty matches.
Yeah.
Would you, in the sort of big keg of people turning up to have a go at Rhea at the start of the show, would it not be better to have her interrupt that?
Yeah.
Singularly on her own. She's a great character worker. Good talker. She can do it. I think the crowd would have popped for it. And I think what we saw was more of a reaction of they just reacted how she was presented, as opposed to being allowed to just react to her.
Exactly.
I think she wasn't made to feel a big enough a deal as she was, because she was couched in, we were seeing the debut of the Robert Stone brand, not the debut of here's Chelsea Green.
Yeah, and I'm hoping they do something that's not so Titus Worldwide with it as well, because I think the problem with Titus Worldwide was they only really ever had time to have one figurehead for the company, in the sense that it was Apollo Crews for a bit, but then when they got Tozawa and Tozawa was the cruiserweight champion, they were like, it's Tozawa now.
Mm.
And then they only bothered to use that faction to push one thing at one time.
Mm.
So I'm hoping that doesn't happen here. I'm hoping they do sort of like a douchey startup style thing.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like it's really specific and
yeah.
It's only about like this type of wrestling and that's the only thing we want to push. I just think something like that, getting it away from just being a money thing and being about like capitalism.
Yeah, there's a great heel gimmick somewhere to be done of like super douchey, like West Coast liberal youth. Mm. Like there's something in that that I think would really hit home well.
And would work really well with Chelsea Green, I think. Like I think she could do that character really well. I mean, Daniel Bryan got being a hipster as an evil thing. Like he got veganism as a heel tactic.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So I guess, yeah, it's that kind of, I think there's something in it. I'm interested to see what they do. I just felt that this section fell flat for me. In an NXT that I guess on paper said to me, this is going to be an amazing show. And then there was all these announcements peppered throughout as well, like this and then Alex Shelley and things like that were sort of just swept under the rug. And I was kind of like, you could have made more of these things and spent a bit less time on some of this other stuff. And it would have been a better show.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it, when they bring in like, it's a bit like when, do you remember when Liger faced Tyler Breeze and they announced it by just a sort of Regal saying it and then playing a video package.
Yeah.
It's difficult when they bring in the Japanese or the indie guys for these one-offs, because obviously you have to basically book them twice. Because what you really want is Kushida to come out and say, here's my partner.
Yeah.
And then get the big pop. That's what you want to do. Obviously, that's so difficult to do.
Yeah.
So like you said, those announcements end up actually getting swept under the rug a little bit, which is a shame. And again, in a show in which I think the whole show actually did feel a bit flat for some reason. I can't really put my finger on it.
Maybe it's just they've been booking every single show like a takeover before Christmas. And then we had 2 weeks of Christmas, so we all had a little sort of sit down and a think. And then they were like, here's a show, and it's pretty like, it's up there with like good wrestling, but it's not quite a takeover. And everyone was like, what is this?
Well, yeah, I think what's happened really, I mean, we're kind of bouncing all over the place now, but I think what's happened broadly over the last, well, since Survivor Series, basically, is that because of the weird timing of takeovers.
Yep.
Because we're basically going to get two in like a couple of months apart, aren't we? But like,
they're weirdly divided.
So the stakes feel really far away all the time.
Yeah.
And so we're on this sort of bell curve. At some point, the stakes will never have been further away. Mm. And we're sort of reaching that point now where everyone's saying and doing stuff, but there's no payoff in sight.
Well, I think, and we'll get into this more in a minute, but I think some of that is because they're trying to use NXT in the same way that they were using Raw and SmackDown to push NXT when they wanted to beat AEW in the ratings. They're now trying to use NXT to push a bunch of other stuff that they've got on the cards.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
That in from Chris Field, who says, did you all notice that Mauro couldn't keep any names straight during the six women tag? He had quite a few slip-ups and weird turns of phrase in this episode. But
I mean, he always tries to jam in all his really long... the names thing was weird, actually. His commentary hasn't been... I've started to be turned off a little bit from it, to be honest. Mm. I think it's a bit... It's a lot of Mauro in his commentary, and not necessarily enough of him just reacting to, you know. Yeah, it's like he's got his own script now.
Honest reactions. Yeah. Tim Arnold also says, not seeing many super chats, so here's some pity money. Also, it's great to be back watching NXT streams live. First one since NXT moved off the network. Well, thanks for watching. Thanks for the pity money as well. Although we don't like to accept pity. We do like to accept money. So it is a very difficult place to be. Jump in with the rest of the show, because it opens with Rhea Ripley, the newly minted NXT Women's Champion, coming out to chat to the crowd, which I sort of went, I don't think she's very good on the mic.
Oh, what, you're not a big fan of Ripley promo?
I think Ripley does the I'm really tough promo
really well.
Over and over again.
Oh, I see what you mean.
I don't even think she does it that well. I think I would sort of like to see her move away from, like, I want to fight now, and all those kind of turns of phrase. And it's almost a little bit too wrestling when some other people aren't that wrestling.
Yeah, it's difficult when if you're that kind of character and you're the face, because faces obviously always need to fight against the odds. Mm-hmm. And it becomes sort of heroic to be like, no, I'll take on whatever challenge.
A billion people.
But at some point it becomes dumb. Like, do you remember when...
if she'd have just entered herself in the War Games match on her own.
On her own, yeah. You'd have been like, okay.
What are you doing?
Yeah. It's like, it's a bit like, you remember when Ronda asked for the triple threat?
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, what? Why? Like, that's you get nothing out of that. There's no... This isn't like endearingly heroic. This is just weird.
Yeah, stupid.
So I think at some point it does... I think that's why that's difficult to keep up that shtick.
Yeah.
Because before, the odds were against her.
Mm-hmm.
And now the odds are pretty even / you know, she's still got friends.
Yeah, yeah.
She's got the belt.
Well, this sort of immediately fell into friendship as well. Like, this all started with Ripley saying, I've got brilliant memories from last year. I won this thing. That's all great. Lovely, lovely stuff. Tony Storm's music hits. Tony comes out. And that's when I thought this section was like, it came alive now. Because it became Rhea Ripley versus the world. It became that sort of like, it was a dibbing contest of like, well, I've got dibs on that. I've got dibs on that. Everyone came out. It was really, I think everyone had something good to say as well. It wasn't one of those ones where everyone comes out and says the same thing. Like Raw did it a lot. About a year ago, where they would have someone with a belt and AJ would come out and someone else would come out and someone else would come out and they'd say a scripted line of like, well, I want the championship.
Yeah.
This, everyone sort of made a claim here without really having to do it so obviously. So Tony Storm's brilliant line of, I'm so proud of you. I'm so happy for you. Really, truly, I am. But you remember that time I beat you?
Yeah.
Like that just instantly says, I'm after this. I loved when Bianca Belair comes down. She goes, I've got 20/20 vision. I'm better than you.
Yeah.
You don't even go here to Tony Storm.
Yeah.
Better than you. And then to Ripley, I'm better than you. I just think this set up the kind of friction in the women's division that they were trying so hard to make before War Games. But they were trying to stir this kind of friction up in War Games without it really being about the belt. And it didn't work incredibly well, I don't think, until Ripley came on the scene. They were sort of stewing away at this stuff. Here, I thought it worked brilliantly.
Yeah, this worked really well.
And it also, you know, this is probably the reason why some of the stuff in NXT this week fell a bit flat, because it was pushing Worlds Collide and Blackpool Takeover Blackpool 2.
Yeah.
So, like, we've got Kaylee Ray comes out with the NXT UK women's belt and says, at Worlds Collide, we're going to face off, me and you, Ripley, or me and Tony, I guess. Me and you, Ripley, definitely. And I'm going to leave as the double women's champion. And Tony's like, well, maybe I'll be the double women's champion, because we have a match on Sunday includes Viper / Piper Niven.
The good thing about the way they did this, I think, was not because there's actually necessarily much link between the NXT UK audience and the NXT audience. I do think, I do think there's a lot of people who just watch one or the other.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But we've seen Toni Storm and we've seen Kaylee Ray.
Yeah.
And we've seen them both be tough and influential and do cool stuff.
Yeah.
On NXT.
Uh-huh.
Or associated things that you definitely would have caught otherwise. And so when they come out, they've got mean.
Toni Storm coming out got a massive
pop. It was so interesting seeing, like, the Toni Storm pop against the Chelsea Green pop. And I know Toni Storm's one of the stuff, it's not like, I kind of feel like she's been sort of soft launching in NXT for a while.
Yeah. But she's been an alpha for a long time.
A lot of alpha testing. But it was interesting having the Chelsea Green debut on the same show as they just had Toni Storm just come out.
Yeah.
And just be on her own as well. Not when the ring was full of people all shouting.
Yeah.
It was just her and Ripley
mm-hmm.
just telling each other that they can beat each other.
Like, has she been on NXT proper? Like, apart from when, like, I think when they were doing the sort of crossover women's championship stuff, but she's not been, like, since she lost the belt, I don't think she's appeared. Or did she in the run-up to Survivor Series at all? I don't think she did.
No, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I just
you know what? I've just got this thing in my head. I just feel like I've seen her at some point.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah. I think, like, so this all eventually broke down into the obvious brawl. All the blonde people sided together. And then and then everyone else was on the other team. So it ended up being Ripley and Toni Storm and Candice LeRae versus Bianca Belair, Io Shirai, and Kaylee Ray.
It was a classic Raw opening.
Yeah, it was, and they all sort of cleared the ring, and the faces were in the ring, and the heels were on the outside. Someone comes down and goes, it's gonna be a tag match. Yeah. And they're like, this is now a tag match. And it's like, but we were, the reason the people are on the outside is because they brawled themselves to the outside, so that's gonna go badly, which it does, because the story of this match was that Io Shirai and Bianca Belair cannot get on.
No.
They kept accidentally knocking each other off the apron, and that leads to a moment where Io Shirai hits the double knees. She goes up to do the moonsault, I think, on Candice. And as she's on the turnbuckle ready to do it, Bianca Belair just tags herself in, hops in, and goes to hit the KOD. But Io Shirai springboard moonsaults into the ring, knocking her out, and then just leaves the match, giving Ripley the opportunity to hit Riptide, win the thing. I think that kind of booking it's a really fun sort of, remember what happened last year? We've kind of had 2 weeks, like NXT's basically had 2 weeks off. It's like that pre-taped Christmas show didn't do a lot. Last week's show was the awards, essentially. We didn't even do a live stream because there wasn't really much point. This was a good opening section that just went, here's the reminder. These are all the people that you've got to pay attention to in this division. Here is all of the tension that you need to understand. Mm-hmm. And also, here's a little advert for this thing this weekend and this thing in 2 weekends' time. Which all kind of builds up this idea that you know, I think the champion versus champion thing, obviously they've stolen the double champion idea from Wrestle Kingdom. This weekend.
Even if they were like, always going to do it, it's always a bit like, I mean, at least give it a week.
they've really not waited. I just think this was a really smart way of just having a celebration for Rhea Ripley's big win that was like, felt like they pitched that as kind of like a NXT fan uprising mosh pit thing anyway, with all the people getting the ring and holding it up on the shoulders and stuff and inviting all the NXT United crowd to be in there. And then, to do this sort of big brawl that turns into just a fun match to open a show really hot when I guess all your storylines are kind of stalled over Christmas anyway. It was great. I really liked it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
We then had the first of two promo packages that sort of felt like one promo package story being told over two parts of Tommaso Ciampa basically saying that winning Goldie was when he sort of discovered his purpose. That was his life. Adam Cole has stolen his life and he wants it back. This was a really good little promo package. Sets up the idea that I think basically it's a shoe-in for Tommaso Ciampa versus Adam Cole at Portland. There's no point really beating around the
bush. There's no one else.
He never lost. He's sort of gone through everyone else at some point.
Everyone else is now trying to get the North American title for some reason.
Well, and Johnny and Finn from, as we saw in this show, they have beef that they need to scrap.
Everyone else is busy.
This is kind of perfect. We then got a little Keith Lee promo backstage, that new form of NXT promo where people just sort of talk to the locker room. Yeah, it's not to Kathy Kelly, it's just to themselves.
Sometimes they're just turning around at the wall.
In the presence, yeah. I don't know, what is it?
I don't like it.
No?
I think it's weird. I don't know why you wouldn't... If there's a camera there, address it, or be interviewed by someone, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
No.
Why is that? What are they doing?
He was being very dramatic of being like, I've been overlooked, I've done this
thing. It's
not
like we're catching them in the act.
Like really slowly turns around.
Yeah, it's not being shot like a candid camera. It's not like we're catching them having some moment or having an interaction with someone else. They look over here, if I'm the camera, they look over here, then they look at the wall, then look over here. It's like they don't have a focus for the... Just, if there's someone there, just... Ask them a question.
Yeah.
And just talk, just do an interview. Or just do a promo straight down the barrel.
Yeah.
Like a normal wrestler.
It's neither the sort of documentary style promo, nor is it the well-produced hip-hop video style promo that they normally do.
With all the
little
Dutch angles.
But that's what I mean. I think that's what WWE promos probably are the closest to in that sense. It's like people are talking down the lens and then there's footage cut over the top. Or it's I'm doing a formal interview with somebody. It's not... I'm in a room pretending I'm talking to myself, but also talking to everyone else.
And maybe it would work.
And ignoring the crew.
But maybe it
really
would work.
The really obvious crew who are here.
But also, maybe it would work if the shot wasn't so tight.
Mm.
So the camera looks like it's really close to them.
Put it on the ceiling like that, like it's a CCTV.
Well, yeah, anything.
Yeah.
Or...
Like just, you've hacked their webcam.
Hacked their Alexa. he did also debut his new beard.
Mm.
Chin strap beard, quite a heel beard in the history of beards.
Mm. Not on Keith Lee, though.
Not on Keith Lee.
Nothing the man does is heel at the moment.
Not rare to get over a chin strap, though.
Mm. I think he's done it.
You think he's done it?
I think Keith Lee's allowed to do whatever the hell he wants, frankly. We then got the Forgotten Sons versus Imperium in the first round match of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic.
If we're keeping up with hairstyles, Cutler now has short hair.
He does have short hair, yeah. Doesn't necessarily suit the biker thing, I don't think, but it's fine. He looked like...
Yeah, but not a white trousers.
No, well, that's why Riker just wore black ones, and he was like, yeah, I'll wear the vest, but I'm not wearing the stupid trousers. This was a good and fun tag match that, you know, I don't think people were particularly excited for in the audience at all, really. People have seen Eichner and Bartel, and... You know, Imperium doesn't quite have the impact without Walter there.
I thought that was interesting how noticeable the reaction is different when Walter's not there.
When Walter's there, everyone's like, my God, it's Walter. Yeah. And also, I think that makes Imperium feel like a cohesive unit. Like, and I think those couple of surprises once they went live last year where they did Imperium's having a match and then Walter comes out. And everyone was like, oh my God, I never thought he'd go to America. Even though, obviously, he has been on takeover shows and stuff before. But, like, you know, people didn't think he was going to show up for weekly TV. It was like, it's Forgotten Sons. I felt like it was a foregone conclusion that Imperium were going to go through with.
Yeah.
One, to build into Blackpool 2, because they're in the four-way tag match for the titles against Gallus, Grizzled Young Veterans, and... Southwest, whatever it's called. What are they called? Subculture. Southwest Subculture, which is Flash Morgan, Webster, and Mark Andrews.
I thought this was kind of like, that felt like a foregone conclusion. Also, it did... I don't think the Forgotten Sons have ever really done anything with getting all the way to the final last year. They never really made good on that. They've kind of been...
They've become enhancement.
They've become enhancement talent, but they've also become that sort of like, weirdly, that enhancement talent that keeps getting squash spots, like they did against a bunch of guys from Evolve the other week, where Jackson Ryker did the big choke slam onto the apron, which they've had all these really cool moments happen around them.
Ryker killed a guy.
killed a guy on live TV. They are just... They're just there, and they're not really doing anything now. But they keep having good matches. This was a good match that just felt really flat.
Yeah, I do. I kind of... They are just... It's difficult, because I do think NXT has been historically quite good at keeping people legitimate and just waiting their turn.
Yeah.
I actually am quite surprised that it's now not their turn. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were going to go quite far again in the Dusty Tournament.
Well, it seems like it's just the same top people. Now that NXT doesn't really have a move up to the main roster culture, there is a top level of people who are just immovable from that spot. So, you know, you've got to imagine that people like Matt Riddle and Pete Dunne are going to go quite far in this tournament. As they quite like Franken teams to go all the way.
See, that's also a bit of showing that they've created a tag team tournament in which Franken teams often go very, very far and are the most important.
Yeah.
Or at least the most important storyline. And that's actually a bit of a shame and a bit counterproductive.
Yeah. It's an odd one.
I actually was kind of, in a weird...
Do you think the final will be at Worlds Collide?
Because
I think the final will end up being one NXT team and one NXT UK team. And then they'll do that as like a Worlds Collide thing. So it will be... It obviously won't be Undisputed Era or Imperium, but it will be Kushida and Shelley versus Webster and Andrews or something like that.
Yeah, I think Kushida and Kushida and Shelley are going to lose that match.
Yeah,
yeah.
No more Shelley.
I think they've done this before where they just book a guy because they can. like Liger was just free, so they booked him. Do you know what I mean?
He's really free now.
He's
really free.
So yeah, I think they're going
to... It's called wide open diary.
Yeah. I think they're going to lose.
Yeah.
So I think that's one Franken team out. That's just going to be like a fun thing. I want Chris Sabin to come out. so bad.
We'll get onto that in a bit, because that's really what I want.
But yeah, I really did actually think that this was going to be Forgotten Sons. I really thought they were going to win. I actually was kind of hoping they would. Everyone can complain about Ryker being a sort of classic green but has a great look type guy that goes far in WWE. I don't have a problem with that.
No.
I mean, you know, Goldberg was fine. I don't have a problem with that kind of guy being around. I'm not offended by it in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think Blake and Cutler are really good.
Yeah.
And I think they're a good team. I think...
There's some amazing spots in this match that they pulled
off. Now, do I think that they should be the, you know, rocket strapped to the top of the roster and whatever? No. But I think they are exactly the kind of legitimate veteran team capable of really good matches who can really keep the tag division afloat for a really long time. And I think it's important to ensure you have a team like that. And... keep them going far in stuff like tournaments.
Yeah.
Keep them having wins against important teams every now and again, just so that they don't slip so far down the ladder. Because I would absolutely say that if we're talking about the two teams, that combination of the Forgotten Sons is way more established than that two of Imperium.
Yeah.
In front of that crowd.
Well, they were just called the European Union before, weren't
exactly,
they?
Exactly, yeah.
Right, yeah.
So I don't know. I think that was. I think this was a time to have them... go over.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because I guess the Undisputed Era have had been around those belts. They've either been the challengers or the champions in every feud for them for the last like year and a half, I guess. And then all that big top level competition has kind of disappeared from NXT as well. So we're now in a phase where there is, in the tag team tier list, God tier is Undisputed Era, tier one. There's nothing. Tier two, a bunch of other Everyone random else. People. Yeah, yeah, and then like probably tier like after this tournament, tier one's going to be Riddle and Dunn, and then everyone else still.
Yeah, see, I would just, I mean, maybe I'm being a bit too much of a purist about it. If you're going to do a tag team tournament, I want to, there's nothing wrong with the Franken team doing well or even winning it. I don't, you know, Balor and Joe, obviously the main example. I don't have any problem with it existing.
Yeah, that's the Black and Ricochet.
Yeah, I would just rather a really popular tag team tournament put over a tag team every now and again.
Yeah, I think also because it was good when it was for a prize that isn't the cup. The cup is a NAF prize.
I don't know why we're not doing this for the title shot.
Well, because two tag team champions.
Because they're in it. I know. It. Yeah. I know. But that's why are they? They don't care either.
Don't know.
Like it's not the thing has not been established enough.
No.
To warrant like why do they want that cup?
I'd have to tell you.
They've got the belts. Surely all they want to do is unify the belts. So we're obviously moving to like because also Worlds Collide is way more push this time than it's ever been.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
I think
Worlds Collide like last year was a house show that happened to have Luke Harper on it. This is not like it wasn't billed like this.
Hey, Dream was there.
He was there. Like this is being really pushed. Mm-hmm. So I don't know whether we're moving to some kind of merger of some description.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just trying to get as much exposure for the BT thing. I don't know if Americans care about that. WWE might. I don't know what's going on. Either way, they're giving it a lot more push than they normally do.
Yes.
And I just think you need, again, when we talk about, like we talked about stakes earlier, the stakes are really far away. There's no stakes in this tournament.
No.
There always was before.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know why anyone's involved.
Well, here's the reason why some people are involved, because we then saw Matt Riddle backstage with Kathy Kelly, and he gave a very good reason for why he wanted to be in the Dusty Cup and why he wanted to team with Pete Dunne. He said, I went up to Pete Dunne and I said, you're a bruiserweight, I'm a bro, Dusty Cup.
That's it?
And then he gave him the Pete special. I gave him the bro special. And that's it, the bruiserweights were formed.
Yeah.
It's like, why? Like
now, I do think, you know, sometimes you hear an idea and you think they came up with the title first and worked out the idea later.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, it's a great tag team name.
It's a fantastic tag team name.
And let's not, for a second, doubt that it's a great pun and a great, what do they call, portmanteau when you put things together?
Excuse me.
Sorry. So, I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm.
Wordplay to your heart's content. I still don't know why they're in this tournament.
Well, there's no prize.
Other than needing something to do.
It's a pointless prize. Then we got a match between Austin Theory and Joaquin Wilde. Austin Theory picks up the win here after hitting. His roll through DDT is Wilde's coming off the ropes, and then he hits a version of the TKO to pick up the win.
Joaquin Wilde going for his Bruno gear again.
Yeah, it was. He looked like he was Ant-Man.
Yeah.
He's got like Ant-Man goggles.
Yeah.
It's really weird, but then with the alien from Aliens head, the really long,
the cycling helmet,
carapacey, I guess that's what it is. It's a cycling helmet.
It's a cycling helmet.
Yeah. Well, that's really spoiled my imagination. This was a completely fine match that was entirely set up to make Austin Theory look good and start to build momentum behind him. I think they have big plans for Austin Theory.
Yeah, he's good. They're both good.
Yeah, they're both really good. Like, we haven't seen Wilde for ages on the former DJZ. He's been an absentee for a long time.
There's quite a few people coming back out of the woodwork like that now, which is good. They need to rotate in some more people. I think Austin Theory is really talented. And what is he, he's like 22?
Yeah,
he's really...
23, 22.
Yeah. They mentioned it in the commentary. I was surprised, but I thought he was older than that.
He basically just left Evolve as a long-reigning champion and just walked straight into WWE. Within a couple of months, was on TV against Roderick Strong.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
He's really good. I don't know much about his sort of. Obviously, I don't know much about his personality, his gimmick, whatever.
Yeah,
but he's a good wrestler, and I enjoyed this match.
Yeah, I think I reckon they'll turn him heel.
He looks like a heel.
Yeah, I think he'd be a really good heel. We then got a bunch of people warming up backstage, like Undisputed Era and Damian Priest, who was making a woman dress him.
Yeah, what is Damian Priest? Because I wrote down...
Sex vampire.
Yeah, I think his gimmick is...
Sex vampire.
Is he a sex trafficker?
Yeah. Yes.
They need to have a thing like Taken, where he's just got a little red button. That should be his promo.
You think?
That should be like, yeah.
I think he just he looks like someone who's going to that like blood orgy from Blade.
Yeah.
That's all he reminds me of.
He's a pimp of some description.
Like with the UV light looking for the little special tags. We then got Undisputed Era versus Gallus in a match that I thought would be better than it was.
Yeah, it's a shame because I think Wolfgang is amazing.
I think
love Wolfgang.
I think pretty much the components of this match are really good. They didn't gel here, or the sort of structure of the match didn't do it for me. This match was all about Gallus beating down O'Reilly and Fish while both Roderick Strong and Adam Cole watched from outside and then interfered and then helped Yui pick up the win.
Yeah.
And it means that Gallus, the defending champions, the defending NXT UK tag team champions, go into Sunday with a loss.
So do you think, would you have preferred them to have done some sort of just wacky
not
non-finish?
Been in it?
Or not been in it.
The tournament, I think, would have been a really good one.
Oh, yeah. Again, neither of these teams should be in the tournament.
They could have had a match that they won on the show. But I don't think this doesn't make me want to go, wow, I really want to watch this four-team tag team match that doesn't involve two of the people aren't on this show.
Yeah.
Because then that means that Grizzled Young Vets and Southwest Subculture are on next week's show in their matches. So they if they win their match on the weekend, they're going to turn up as the tag team. So we're going to see different people keep turning up as the NXT UK tag team champions in NXT for like a month stretch leading up to Worlds Collide.
They should have done it the other way around. So they should have done Forgotten Sons versus Gallus.
Yeah.
Undisputed Era versus Imperium. Would that make more sense? Again, accepting that them being in the tournament in the first place does not make any sense.
No, I don't.
Just in terms of booking this night, would it have made... Because then they could have both picked up a win.
I don't know. I'd love to tell you. I really would.
And then they could have had some sort of interference afterwards and had a fight or whatever.
Yeah, I think maybe...
And then taken that momentum.
Maybe just putting them together as a, like, Gallus versus Imperium as a warm-up match for the weekend would have just made a bit more sense.
No, I'm saying you do Gallus versus Forgotten Sons.
So they...
So you do there. NXT UK versus NXT,
but then
NXT UK
Imperium
versus...
are going to beat Undisputed Era.
No, you have Undisputed Era beat Imperium.
Which also...
And you have Gallus beat Forgotten Sons, and then they take that momentum into the next.
Oh, I don't know. I really don't know. Anyway, Adam Cole causes a distraction here, doesn't he? He does that step up in Zaguri thing he does on the outside, and then they hit Chasing the Dragon, and that's the win.
Yeah.
This didn't do much for the... Didn't really do much to feel like... Because also, this is the preposition of Worlds Collide, right? Is that it's champion versus champion and cross-branded battles. This was literally tag team champions versus tag team champions, and was just a cheeky win for the main brand.
Yeah, it was a strange
booking. But not really build like that.
No, and again, because we don't really know why any of this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an issue. It's not really an issue NXT has had before. The thing that they do very well, and why they correctly held off even having second belt for a long time,
mm-hmm.
was everyone is always very clear about why they're there. And generally speaking, if you're a singles competitor, you're either trying to get the North American or the main mm-hmm. title. And if you're a tag team, trying to get a tag title. And if you're in the women's division, you're trying to get the women's title. It's very clear. Now, it's less clear why anyone's doing anything.
Yeah,
and that has been that's a very rare moment for NXT in its sort of modern.
It's because the Undisputed Era have all the belts, and then so that kind of works in a war game scenario where you can just go, well, it's not really about the titles, and everyone else gets a nice time to shine. But it does mean that we're now coming into a brand new year of TV, sort of aimless. No one's really in the mix for.
But it wouldn't be aimless if you took the tag. Champs out of a stupid tournament
and let everyone have enough tag teams. They bring someone down is what I would say as well. I think
yeah, bring someone down. Bring anyone down.
Yeah,
I actually don't care. Bring the Dudley boys back.
It felt like I guess it feels like the story in this NXT of the stuff that happened in the matches fell flat. But then I think a lot of the talking and a lot of things people were just saying randomly were really good. Like the Matt Riddle thing, I loved that promo. I thought it was so funny. Ciampa's promos I thought were wicked. The opening talking segment was great. This section with Gargano coming out, I really loved as well.
Like, this was good.
This was, so Gargano makes his big return to come and talk about Finn Balor and how much he bloomin' hates him. And it's your classic Johnny Gargano fired up Johnny Wrestling, Johnny NXT, Johnny Takeover promo where he's like, I have carried this place on my back.
I loved the sort of half shoot nature of it.
Yeah, and it was couched in the idea that, like, you know, Finn Balor is also someone who in his babyface incarnation carried NXT on his back. He carried it for longer than anyone else, in fact. But Johnny says here, quite rightly, when the call came for you to go up to the main roster, you put your flag down immediately. You went. I got that call in August and I didn't leave because when I say I love this place, I mean it. That was...
He did still go... He was on Raw, though, wasn't he?
He popped in for a
week. He did, though, didn't he?
It's a timeshare.
Also, do you remember... I kind of forgot this. Do you remember when that happened? When Balor went up? They actually had the video of them backstage. And it was like the old draft, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Everyone's like, way, well done, mate. Because back then it was so firmly a development... thing.
He was the first pick as well.
Yeah. So, you know what? In a way, a slightly unfair broadside from Mr. Gargano.
I mean, the rules have changed. But he also, I think...
And also, he did take the call.
Yeah. He also brilliantly... But I think it works really well for this.
It was
this
really good promo.
It was the right thing to say to Finn Balor as well. I think in that sense, like, it was kind of like... It was heel-level teasing, but works really well for Johnny because it reinforces that level of his character, but it also gave Finn something to sort of spit feathers about when he comes out. And I think Finn as well really sold the being pissed off, especially after Johnny's little, you went and you were being the extraordinary man who does extraordinary things.
Yeah, it was really funny.
Like all of that, I think all of this like properly laying into the main roster stuff with Finn is just giving him more fire.
Yeah.
And working the audience brilliantly, because I'm sure Finn doesn't care about any of that stuff that he did there. He's happy to be doing what he's doing now.
Yeah.
He comes out, though, and he's like...
He's gone full Conor McGregor now.
Yeah, he's...
When he called him a rat, I was like, this is very McGregor stuff.
I loved when he said, like, maybe we should call you Johnny Promo, because that's all the doctors will clear you for. Like, it was all good build-up. And then he just says, if you want a match, ask Regal. We'll have one at TakeOver Portland if you make it that far.
Yeah.
That's such a good threat. Like, it's not like, I'm going to beat you up, I'm going to do it. It's just like... I'm just gonna harass you now for however long.
I like I love how over the last sort of it's been since the Ciampa rather really how I like babyface but intense Johnny.
Yeah.
That's the best version of him, I think, that we've seen. Like the most sort of real, the most interesting. When there was a lot of like soft focus promos about how much he loves his dog or whatever.
Yeah,
they go so far.
He loves
far.
Disneyland as well.
Yeah, that goes so far. Like he's a relatable, interesting, passionate guy, you know, like a fan first.
Mm-hmm.
But I like it when he really is fighting for something.
Yeah,
and because the people at the top of the company, you know, you've got all the golds within the Spirit Era who are sort of their whole thing is that they sort of hate NXT.
Yeah,
you know, they're better than NXT. They're better than everything. It's cool to like. It's nice. It's really. It works really well to have this guy just bearing the flag for the brand, and for the people in the room. It's a very. It's a confluence of a lot of different things and timing and stuff. But it's worked out really well, and I love that those two specifically have really great promo chemistry.
Yeah, I can't.
They
wait
bounce
to see
really
the
well
ring,
off
yeah.
each other. It's making both of their work better because their insults are great.
Yeah,
no one's being like you. You worry, don't you, sometimes when a face gets intense that they can't really lay in as much.
Yeah.
But with this, they're both getting in really good shots.
They've both
found
the right
both,
angle. Like, yeah. And I think what won this week's NXT for me was the scripting, because it was obviously like all of these promos, all of these sections, everything everyone was saying has been thought about and creatively decided upon, but it's been delivered so well and so naturally that you don't really sit there going, that is a scripted promo that somebody's saying, or that is something they thought about before. Like everything everyone was doing just came across as naturalistic and like very in character, had a good through line. I thought all the storytelling stuff was brilliant.
Yeah, it was.
And then you had things like they announced before the next match that Kushida's going to be partnering with Alex Shelley in the Dusty Classic tournament, and they just sort of go,
Chris Sabin,
they're just like, okay, bye then, like, get rid of that information. Because this is... that's like a really big deal. This is a tag team. This is a New Japan tag team, the Time Splitters, that were around between 2012 and 2015, yeah. something like that, 2016 maybe. And this does feel like a really bit like for wrestling insiders, this is a massive deal. I mean, I hope they go out and I hope Chris Sabin turns up because I want the Motor City Machine Gun.
It's
really badly.
I know. It's a difficult thing, isn't it?
Imagine if they were like, our tag division, so it's got, there's not enough people in our tag division. What will we do? It's like, we'll just get the Motor City Machine Guns. What a solution.
I think it's such a tricky one, isn't it? Because I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just me because I'm of a certain age and TNA was on UK TV at favourable times for a long time. But like, that team is so just like I love the Motor City Machine Guns so much, and it's like having those two come out together, it kind of only makes me want to see the Motor City Machine Guns, which is a shame because the Time Splitters are awesome as well, and Alex Shelley has just been in a couple of like all-time great fun tag teams to watch. That's just how good he and Kushida are, and how good he and Chris Sabin are, but. It's a shame that I was kind of like, okay.
We're getting there. So this guy, weirdly, I thought this would have been better as a, like you said earlier, Kushida just going, and my partner is, Alex Shelley's name comes up.
I'd have waited to the tournament. I'd have waited.
Yeah, I would have waited for the tournament. Because I also don't think this is going to build interest in the way that, like, I think they think this is going to build interest because Wrestle Kingdom's just happened. So they're like, New Japan's all the news this week. We can do something that's related to New Japan. We'll make this announcement. That means viewers next week. Instead of just going, here's this really big, cool surprise.
Yeah, I think you might as well wait for the big, cool surprise because they're not winning the tournament.
No.
And I'd be shocked if they even win their match.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think if they had signed Alex Shelley for 5 years...
We might have heard that. Yeah, you never know.
You know, so I don't know. I think because of that and that alone, you keep his partner secret.
We then got the second Ciampa promo, which was the sort of follow-on from the first, where he basically said that Adam Cole's run with the championship is tainted because he never beat Ciampa, and he said, "I don't know who I am without the belt, or who I will become without it," which I thought was another just clever bit of scripting, good stuff. But it feels like. It kind of feels like, you know, Ciampa's kind of doing what the opposite of what Johnny's doing, in the sense that Johnny's going to be harried by Finn until Portland. And now Ciampa's going to sort of harangue Adam Cole until we end up at Portland as well. So it's like there's this build of like passion and fury happening across like the DIY split, which is nice. We then got the announcement of the Women's Battle Royal for next week for the number one contendership, which another bit of information that NXT just was like, and this thing passes. And we're just kind of skimming through all this like really important information as quickly as possible because we've got so many matches in the show as well. This was so tightly packed.
I mean, this is not something I would normally say about WWE product, but like, I think NXT, maybe I have said this before, maybe I said this before just for the new year, but NXT does need a few more promos and a bit more just telling us what's happening and why it's happening. Just a little bit more of that wouldn't go amiss. Because, I mean, like I said, these announcements are happening. They should be really meaningful. And they're sort of just getting away with it because the crowd's going to pop for it anyway. But that's not a good enough reason to not do the work. To put this over.
To have a bit more time into it. But this was like literally happening as the entrances were happening for the main event, which was Keith Lee versus Dominik Dijakovic versus Damian Priest versus Cameron Grimes in a fatal four-way for the number one contendership for the North American Championship. Another match that was just announced out of nowhere, essentially.
Firmly establishing kind of what we were saying before Christmas as well. Like when all those guys were floating around having a go at Adam Cole. Like, obviously, it was going to be Ciampa and they've immediately been put down.
They'd just go down a rung, go for the next one,
You know, bit of a shame, really, because there was a lot of work put into them all doing all that stuff, and we've just sort of forgotten about that.
It is a shame. But I think what I liked about this match was that it kind of felt like they knew that too, to some degree, because this was a match that was very much built around the notion that they all know each other so well, except Grimes. See, Grimes is kind of the smaller man in this match. He's the sort of not even the known quantity, and he gets a really good quite a couple of really good moments in this match.
I thought Grimes was a great addition.
It was a great addition. He was a really good presence. He did like big moonsault, huge German suplex. He hits the cave in on Dijak on the apron at one point. He points to his hat and he gets a big cheer.
I'm telling you, the hat works.
The hat can piss.
The hat is over. The hat works. Everyone needs to get over the hat. The hat is here to stay.
You apparently said it's got over already.
It's the hat. I love the hat.
The hat can piss off. But then I think the rest of the story was that Lee and Dijak obviously have such a long-running feud that all the moments they have in the ring together, they did this brilliant spot at the beginning where they just got rid of the other two guys and they just swung and missed for a good couple of minutes. And everyone just went crazy when they just had this face-off and they were just like, they both tried to hit their best stuff. They'd all blocked it. We then got that same sort of playback with Priest as well, where Keith Lee catches Priest in the powerbomb, which he's done on two weeks ago's NXT, and starts knocking everyone about with him before hitting a big powerbomb onto the back of Dijak. And then later on in the episode, where in the match where Priest goes to do his middle rope Rana to the outside, or his middle rope Topekonhilo, like he pops up, goes to flip, and just steps back down because Keith Lee's looking at him. And then hits it again later when Keith Lee's not looking, because he knows that that's a very shareable gif of what Keith Lee's done. Keith Lee then also replays some of the hits of doing like the big pop-up moment. But I like the fact that they've not just gone, well, everyone's just going to fall for the same stuff all the time. It's not that sort of like, well, these are the spots that we do, so we might as well just do them. They've constantly innovating and trying new things and building on the knowingness of the audience to go, well, you know what's coming when Damian Priest does this thing. You know what Keith Lee and Damian Priest have done with this before. So if we do this, actually not doing the move now gets a bigger cheer.
Yeah. And I think having Grimes in the mix just gave another foil to that stuff as well. You know, he...
A reason to break things up, a reason to like...
Exactly, yeah, to change the pace. You know, to have a different dynamic when he kind of went one-on-one and he had to play the match differently, like strategically. I thought they all had great chemistry. And I was really glad to see Grimes in there, actually. Because I think, you know, this is, you know, again, before the new year, we were talking about him a lot, saying that he's clearly moving up the ladder. And this was this is exactly the kind of match he should be in now. You know, he is in that place now. Maybe he is the third or fourth contender to the North American Championship.
Yeah.
But he's in that tier.
Well, I mean, he's probably even closer than that in that tier, because the match is ending. Grimes takes out basically everyone along with Lee, and it ends up as Lee and Grimes in the ring for the sort of deciding fall to, you know, the final moments of the match are these two squaring off for the North American title shot, essentially. Like, and it looks in some places like Grimes is about to get it, but Lee manages to catch him and hit the spirit bomb and pick up the big win. Like, I thought this positioned Cameron Grimes as like third.
Yeah.
In my head. But it also, like, I think this is also finally paying off on some of that Keith Lee momentum. Like, this is...
Yes. That's important. I think it's really... Because it doesn't seem unlikely to me that he's going to be in the Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you got to the Rumble and he went really far in it or did something crazy, like if he's the one that throws Lesnar, I'd be like, if that happened, considering how he's been received on the main roster, would that shock you?
No.
It wouldn't shock you. It'd be amazing if it happened. It'd be surprising if it happened. But wouldn't be... it's not out of the realms of possibility that something like that will happen. So it's... There are... balancing his push now, because he was so just on all cylinders flying, and kind of Christmas came a bit of an awkward time, really, because it slows that down a little bit.
That.
So now to have him straight away just back on the accelerator, right, go get that title. And I think he should just go get it.
I think he should have
it. He just needs to just go get it now. Get a win.
Yeah.
Before...
It's in 2 weeks' time, so... Yeah. I'm hoping that we're not going to do another... Because I think the only solution to that match is another shenanigans. And we've already had that exact thing in the triple threat with Roderick Strong. We had it in this match with Gallus on tonight's show. It's like, I think we've overplayed the Undisputed Era's four-man team thing.
Yeah.
Unless they're going to build up another faction or another team to do it. But they need to start doing that sooner rather than later. Because I do think it is... strangling NXT storytelling to some degree, because you're just watching matches going, well, and then the, yeah, and yeah,
yeah, yeah.
You know, and they're trying to find new ways of doing it, like, oh, but Johnny Gargano comes out and that throws Finn Balor off.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah,
but
yeah,
that's the same thing. It's the same story. So yeah, I guess the kind of the prophecy needs to end sooner rather than later, just, I think, for just the benefit of the whole brand, as much as I like the prophecy. But I really, like, I enjoyed this week's NXT. I didn't enjoy it as much as I felt like I should have. In, like, it's weird, if I'd been told what was on it, and sort of had got myself prepped to be, like, excited, I don't think my expectations of how that would have gone when I, like, knew the list of what was happening were met.
Yeah, I think that the show had a slightly flat nature to it. I don't think there's any one reason for that. I think if you did have to pin it on something, I would pin it on the lack of soon to be definable / haveable stakes for these rivalries. I think that everything is just a little bit too far away for it to feel like we're really going somewhere. So that will obviously change over the next, like, that will obviously change as we go on, but like this episode is just I think a timing thing as much as anything.
Yeah.
It just meant it just wasn't quite hitting on all cylinders for me. But
yeah, I think
still great.
We've had a 2-week come down. Everyone's eaten too much. We're all a bit sluggish.
Yeah.
NXT may be guilty of the same thing. Who knows? But before we go, let's just have the last super chat from Jobber JJ, who says, if me and Riddle were a team, our team name would be Bro Job.
I mean, again, it's another...
it's another great bit of wordplay.
Yeah.
Another one. Well, we'll end on that, Bro Job. How fat do you feel after Christmas, Simon?
I do feel fat, actually.
Have you got New Year's resolutions?
Have I got New Year's
people
resolutions?
People are normally like, be less fat.
Yeah, that's not a bad one. No, I don't really have it. I never do New Year's resolutions. Someone, I did, this is a podcast the other day, and someone said they wanted to read 75 books this year, which is a book every 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Which is laudable, but fine if you have a sort of wanky media job which lets you do that all day.
Or a lot of time.
Yeah.
Or you choose really short books.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I definitely have gone through a phase of before.
Yeah. Yeah, same here.
I'm just the novella guy. I'm just the novella
guy. Yeah. If I did have a resolution of any script, it probably would be I do want to get through a few. I've been buying loads of books and not finishing them, so I need to actually read a bit more. But I mean, yeah, no, I never really do resolutions. I sort of, everyone knows what you should be doing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
But are you doing it? Do you have it set in your stuff?
Everyone knows how you're supposed to live, and nobody does it.
No? And what are those ways?
Don't kill.
The Ten Commandments. Simon will now recite for you the Ten Commandments.
God, what are they? Don't covet your neighbor's wife.
Don't covet statues of golden bulls. False idols.
False idols. Don't steal. Don't kill. Oh, don't be jealous.
Don't do drugs.
Don't do drugs. Take your vitamins.
Brother.
No raw dogging.
No. No. Never double dip. And
fork on the left, knife on the right.
Oh yeah, good. Well, there you are. That's your lesson in religious studies for this week on the WrestleTalk podcast. Pete will be back with the SmackDown review on the weekend. Ollie and Luke will also be doing the magazine show tomorrow sometime. Until then, goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.